The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Nice to be with you this morning. Nice to speak to some of you. Yeah, very always lovely to connect in that way. So I'm appreciative. Buddhism week begin with this basic observation that it's intense to be human, you know, and even when it's going well, it's intense, you know. Just the kind of architecture of our nervous system is such that being human is intense, and it can feel a kind of like a blizzard of sorts. The world, sometimes this realm, being human is characterized as a kind of bombardment of the senses, you know, that we are, the mind in a way is being touched by sights and sounds and sensations, thoughts all the time. We can't actually shut off that valve, and so we are these very, like, permeable creatures. And because we seek to gain control over the tides of pleasure and pain, which we can influence but not control, we essentially... to manage the permeability, the insecurity of being human, we turn to a mechanism. And the mechanism is called worrying. Yeah. Right? So this is a researcher who kind of specializes in worrying. Research on that, and what you can see is, like, if we look at the level of our minds, we have a kind of redemptive hope in worrying, you know. And this is not to say there shouldn't be planning or anything like that, but the sense of often implicit, a kind of trust in the process of worrying that. This writer, Borkovec, describes nicely. So it says, when I'm worrying, I'm mostly engaging in thought or talking to myself. This thinking, triggered by internal or external cues that signal danger, primarily concerns the future and involves the anxious anticipation of and mental attempts to avoid the many negative events that I imagine might happen. The consequence of any perception of threat is the activation of basic fight or flight reactions, motivating attempts to escape or avoid. Quite naturally, under these circumstances, I feel compelled to figure out how to prevent these bad things from happening or how to prepare myself for the worst. Worrying is a device that I believe can function to do this. Because I'm devoting large amounts of time and generating and attending to worrisome thoughts, much of my life is spent living in an illusion. Worrying, restlessness, the opposite of tranquility, yeah? It's said to be with us very deep into the spiritual path. That sense of looking out for, waiting for something to happen. That gesture of leaning forward is said not to be uprooted until one is like very free. Yeah? And at the same time, we can sense, and maybe we sense especially in rooms like this, with practices like this, that there's something in us that longs very deeply for peace. Yeah. For the heart to be at rest. And sometimes it almost feels like it's the nervous system longing for the Dharma, you know. Just like, may I be at ease. And peace, even a little, even for a moment, can feel like such a homecoming. Now, the Buddha said to understand tranquility, to understand the path of peace, we actually have to look at, to understand the Dharma is to understand causality, the conditions that are conducive to peace or suffering. And so often in our practice, we feel like we're responsible to manufacture the state, you know. So here we are, we're worried or we're restless, and it's like, okay, I'm actually going to, we sort of put this the onus on us in that moment on our own will to generate, to manufacture something, to manufacture tranquility or peace. And the Buddha says that we're being too simplistic in our causal model, yeah? And that we actually have to look at what are the supportive conditions for tranquility, for peace. And so, at the broadest level, often the kind of practice can be reduced to this in some ways. At the broadest level, like anxiety is a function of clinging. And that the conditions supportive of tranquility, of peace, is letting go. Because clinging always generates a certain measure of anxiety. It complicates, clinging complicates everything. Yeah. But that's a tall order, just to let go of clinging, yeah? So there were just a few very concrete things that I wanted to say about like supportive conditions for tranquility. And these are, for me, I tend to, when I talk about the Dharma, I kind of like to be vague and elliptical and suggestive and just let people decide what it means and how it resonates. And I'm not into the three steps to letting go, or, you know, that's just not really how I've practiced or learned or what's been of benefit. But today, I have three things. So supporting tranquility. So Thomas Merton, for Catholic, roughly Catholic monk, said, to allow oneself to be carried away by a multitude of conflicting concerns, to surrender to too many demands, to commit oneself to too many projects, to want to help everyone in everything, is to succumb to the violence of our times. So the first piece is just around the nature of our commitments and scheduling and actually creating a kind of life that is meets our level of energy and the time we need actually to to resource ourselves, to reconstitute when we put a lot of energy out, to actually be sensitive to that. Nature. Yeah. There's this, I don't know this research well, but it's like some idea that there's actually a restorative effect of nature that actually helps like restore some of our cognitive resources by creating a situation where our attention is not being dramatically grabbed moment by moment by significant, threatening, you know, stimuli that we really need to pay attention to, like 5,000-pound car coming past us, yeah? It's like the attention quite naturally is grabbed in dramatic ways in being in an urban environment. And in nature, it's like, no, there's actually this restorative effect of where that aspect of the attention is not being pulled in that way. Yeah? And then the third thing I want to say, just in what's supporting tranquility, and this comes out of my own recent struggles and experimentation, but is around technology, you know? And The way one person in this realm put it, Tristan Harris, he said something like, when the stock price of a company is very highly correlated with the time we spend on screen, that creates a perverse incentive for us to be made as compulsive as possible, you know? For technology to be engineered to promote compulsivity, and a friend of mine said, like, look, we sit, you know, we meditate for 20 minutes or an hour a day or something. We're training ourselves, but then all the other hours in the day we're literally being trained by the technology we use towards a fragmented, grasping, you know, aversion, right? And so for me, I was just like, I could feel that I did not have a healthy relationship with my iPhone, you know? And I took steps to like actually limit the amount of time and was like moderated the use of it. But at some point, this is just last week, at some point it was just like, I'm not going to win this battle here, you know? The possibility of always entertaining myself is actually a burden. And so you are looking at the proud owner of a flip phone, which is so terribly designed. I mean, to respond to a simple question on a is like, it's epic, you know. So I'm like monosyllabic on my replies, but I honestly, for all of the annoyance of it, I can say truly, immediately, I was happier, you know. And I'm not trying to be like the anti-tech person in Silicon Valley or something, or the Dharma teacher that's on a crusade or something. It's just to share that the sense of not having the option to entertain myself at any moment was actually a very deep relief. And I could see instantly, like, the effect was there's more sense of possibility of tranquility as a supportive condition. Yeah. I haven't looked at the sky in like 5 years. That's an exaggeration, but you know, Bob, you know what I'm talking about, yeah? And so, supportive conditions for tranquility, for non-worry, for settling. Yeah. So I offer that for your consideration. So, thank you.